More than 40 years since the first cases of AIDS were reported, Australia became the unexpected world leader of AIDS prevention and saved thousands of lives. Welcome to the Queer Conversation podcast brought to you by Lottl Media, a show where we discuss all things queer. I'm your host, Silke Bader, a publisher and producer in the LGBTQI plus space for the past 30 years. In Our Blood is a musical drama, a fictionalized story of Australia's radical response to AIDS in the 1980s, inspired by true events. In Our Blood tells the story of people from politics, medicine, and affected communities grappling separately with a terrifying new disease. With no cure in sight, they realize they must all work together to succeed, requiring something truly radical: trust. In this week's episode of Queer Conversation, we speak to Jane Allen, the head writer and executive producer of In Our Blood. Welcome to Queer Conversation, Jane. Thank you so much for joining us. You are here today to talk about a new TV series, ABC TV series, that's launching March 19, In Our Blood.
Yep. One of the screenwriters, an executive producer on it, and the head writer of the show. So it was originally a play written by Adriano Capoletta, and he had done research for years before the play, and then the play was supposed to go on in 2020, and then, of course, COVID hit. So, you know, nothing happened with it. And it made its way to a producer who went to the ABC and said, what have you got for World Pride in terms of drama? And the ABC didn't have anything at that point. So the show was commissioned, and then I was brought on to, because Adriano had never written in television before, so I was brought on to help him create the show. And so we worked with another queer screenwriter, John O'Gavin. In fact, it was all queer creatives. So queer directors, queer screenwriters, queer producers, a lot of queer heads of department, queer actors playing queer characters. So it was amazing to work on a show where there were more queers than anyone else. So it was so exciting. It was a fantastic experience making the show as well. And it's about Australia's response to AIDS in the 80s. So we start in 1983 and we go through to 1987 in the four episodes. And it looks at both the government response and also the community response. And those two things were absolutely worked hand in glove, because when AIDS hit, there was an out gay man who was in Canberra as an advisor to Neil Blewett, who was the health minister. And he was able to see what was happening on the ground and bring that information on. He was one of many, but, you know, particularly able to say this was what was going on. The community we were so used to. You know, we were already politicised and used to just looking after ourselves, because it wasn't that long after 78 and so on. And so there was no sense of waiting for the government to do something. They had to just get on and do it. And so that information got back to Canberra. And amazingly, the Labor government, as it then was, went, we need to let the communities run the grassroots response. So they funded IV drug users, gay men's, gay associations and sex worker associations to run that campaign. And all of those activities were criminal at that time. So it was amazing. And they got bipartisan support without question from the Liberal Party. So it's amazing to look at it now and just go, wow, that would never happen. And so it was really, the response was quick, and the grassroots level meant that the communities knew how to reach the people in the community, knew how to use the language of the people in the community. And so Australia's response was completely different from anywhere else's in the world, and became the world leading response and saved tens of thousands of lives. So it's an amazing story to be told, and we're telling it with a queer lens. So we're telling it's a fictionalized drama of, so these characters are amalgams of real people and so on, because there's just so many people involved. You know, we can only tell a small part of it. It's a musical drama. So we have a Greek chorus who sing and give direct address to the camera. So it's a very unusual way of storytelling, but it's a very queer way of telling a queer story. So I think it's not usual kind of ABC fare for a Sunday night.
Lesbians played a really important part throughout this time. Is that highlighted?
My first day coming into work on this show, I said my mission is to put lesbians at the centre of this show because they're such an important part of the story. And so, and I'm really happy that, you know, the rest of the team went, yeah, absolutely, that's what we've got to do. So it really is a community response. One of the lead the characters, a lovely actor, Ryan Murphy, plays a sister of perpetual indulgence. And so we see, you know, one of the lead characters is, again, something that's unusual for the ABC. One of the lead characters is he's a bearded man in a habit for the whole way through the show. You never see him out of his habit. So, you know, there's lots of things that were really fun to play with that we were allowed to go, this is what community looks like. It looks like this, it looks like this, it looks like this. And, you know, it feels like such a privilege to be supported to tell such an important story, and it's quite in your face queer. I mean, you've seen the trailer, you know, it's not pulling any punches about that. I think it's wonderful to be looking back at our history. There are so many stories, of course, that the straight world has never let us tell. And I'm really happy now that in this push for stories from underrepresented communities, that queer stories are really coming to the fore. So, for example, we were talking before about Janet King, which is more than 10 years old now. But at the time that show came out, there was no publicity about the fact that it was a lesbian lead character in a primetime drama series on the ABC. Mm. It had never been done before.
You actually pushed for that lesbian character and you've written her for that show, which is, you know, absolutely fantastic that we see, again, it comes back to just individuals who actually push in their own industry for lesbian visibility. When you started writing In Our Blood, did you have a hope that you wanted to, like, achieve with this show?
Yeah, we did. We really wanted to make it a show that was positive because it's such a, in many ways, it's such a tragic story. But also it's a story of courage and hope and community and love. And so we wanted it to be a positive, as it were, a positive experience. And that's what, I mean, Russell T Davies did that in It's a Sin as well. He said he didn't want it to be just a downer. He wanted to go, we also had a fantastic time. So this is kind of like our love letter to, and thank you to those who did the work to acknowledge those that we lost, to acknowledge those who still live with HIV and AIDS today and who are still doing that work. So it is, that was absolutely our goal to, I suppose, you know, hide those sort of messages in a drama that is funny and sad and moving and triumphant. So those were all of our goals, and I mean, it's up to an audience to decide whether we've achieved them or not, but that is absolutely what we went in with.
The show starts on the 19th of March.
Sunday night, 8:30, ABC. And it'll be available on iView. Once that first episode has gone to air, then all the episodes, the four episodes, will be available on iView after that.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Janet King.
Let's talk about Janet King.
You mentioned before 10 years ago, that was when Janet King was launched, or is it even longer?
It's longer ago than that. So Janet came from a show called Crownies, which was also set in the DPP. And after that, and that was a 22-episode legal drama. And after that, we took that character of Janet, and actually most of the characters in that show, but moved the focus of it to become more of a legal thriller that Janet was the centre of. And the audience response to her in Crownies had been huge. People just, you know, fell in love with that character, which was so great because I was so careful in how I introduced her, I and the script department, in Crownie. So I made sure that it wasn't until episode 8 that we revealed that she was a lesbian. So the idea was that the audience would just go, wow, here's this great, smart, you know, capable woman. But it wasn't, and we knew that she had a partner and we knew that she was trying to have a child, but it wasn't until episode 8 that we revealed that her partner was a woman. And so one of the things that I talk about with that first series of Janet King is that it was actually my stealthy push for marriage equality before that campaign started, because the very first scene in the first series of Janet is Janet and her partner and their kids, and the last scene is Janet and her partner. And the thing that is at stake through the whole of that first series is their relationship, is their family. And it was, here we are, here are women who've been together for 15 years, they've got children, they're actually just like everybody else. But it's so interesting, it really feels like, because the world is changing, it feels to me like Janet has more weight now than she did then. Because I think people now are starting to understand what a big thing it was. And there's, I've also had people come up to me and say, people younger than me come up and say, thank you for Janet because she allowed me to have a conversation with my parents that I didn't know how to have. And that to me is just makes it all worthwhile, you know. And, and also because I think I really wanted to give the world something that I didn't have. In terms of the development of the stories and so on, I worked very closely with a straight woman who's a barrister and who has twins. And so she and I would argue about who Janet was, because I was also a lawyer at one time in my life. So Janet is kind of an amalgam of both of us, but we have little arguments about who she's more. So we spent a lot of time talking to young solicitors in the DPP, you know, getting their experience and their stories and so on. And then it really just kind of evolved out of, if you have eight characters, you have to have somebody queer in there. Statistically, apart from whatever I might want to do to change the world, statistically you need to have a queer character. And I really want to try and do as much queer content as I can. And so I'm working with a lot of young queer writers as well, so you know, helping them to develop the stories that they want to tell, and I'm really hoping that the creative team of In Our Blood can do some more work together. We had a fantastic time together, and we realised the importance of not only telling contemporary stories, but the stories of our history. That, you know, there are lots of things that aren't known that we need to shine a light on. You know, that's not just about, well, I mean, these are the shoulders that we stand on, but you know, this is the, I mean, so much, you know, looking at things about I saw a play the other night that, you know, had a lot of stuff about the 78ers and just going, that courage.
Part of your journey as a screenwriter or as a creative person was that you ended up somehow in the Antarctica.
Yeah, so...
In 2018.
Yep.
Please tell us about
it. Sure. So the Australian Antarctic Division have an artistic fellowship, and it's been going for decades now. And so it's a fellowship that's open to all disciplines. So they call for applications, and they've sent sculptors and dancers and photographers and musicians and writers and all sorts of weird and wonderful people. And... They sponsor you to go to Antarctica, and to there are three stations that Australia has in Antarctica, and when you apply, you don't know which station you might get or for how long. Sometimes they sponsor artists to take the trip on an icebreaker down from Hobart, which is 2 weeks across the Southern Ocean, and then it might just be a return journey. And so you apply, you have to pitch your artistic project, and their idea with it is that they want people to know about the work that the division does, and they want people to, you know, to spread the word about what an extraordinary place this is and how precious it is. And the work that is being done by, you know, scientists there, you know, that are helping us understand, you know, what's going on with climate change, but also the million-year ice core stuff that's going on at the moment is incredibly exciting. So I applied with another writer, Jesse Blackadder, and who was a novelist and who very sadly is no longer with us. And we applied to develop a TV series about living on a station, and also a children's book, a chapter mid-year, 11, you know, sort of 12 to 14 chapter book. And so it was a chance for a kind of cross-fertilisation of practices. So Jesse had never written for television, I'd never written a novel, so I would lead the development of the television thing, Jesse would lead the writing of the kids' book. And we also said to everybody who was on the station, we have an open door policy. Come and see, you know, how artists work. It's really not very interesting because we're just going to sit around and talk a lot, and then we're going to write things on coloured bits of card and stick them up on the wall. So, that's what we did. We were incredibly blessed to have 3 months on Mawson Station, and we travelled from Hobart on the Aurora Australis, I think on its last voyage, actually. And so that was amazing. 2 weeks on the Southern Ocean, which is the roughest ocean on the planet. And that was an amazing experience. And then we landed at Davis Station, and the icebreaker, I mean, it literally breaks the ice until it just rams the ice until it gets to a point where it just can't go any further. And then you're stuck in the ice, and you can see the station, and then all these people just drive across the ice to come and meet you because it's a resupply. The station is a resupply. So we had, you know, big industrial equipment that drove off, you know, the icebreaker. And so we went to Davis Station for a couple of hours, and then we got on a Twin Otter plane and flew across Antarctica for 4.5 hours to get to Mawson. And then this little plane landed on the frozen Horseshoe Harbour. But that flight across Antarctica, I mean, the voyage on the Aurora Australis would have been enough to be amazing. Then to fly across Antarctica on a crystal clear day and just watch the ice for that time, and then to live on this station was just such a privilege. And to be in that amazing environment. We lived as the other stationers did, so there's no staff as such on a station. There's a station leader and a doctor and a chef, and then the rest of the work is done by the people who live there. So we cleaned and we moved supplies for the kitchen from the storage shed up, you know, to the kitchen, and all the other things that needed to be done to maintain the station. So Jesse and I were rostered to do that kind of work. We had to go and do survival training, so we went with the person who was in charge of that, and we spent 3 days training on the ice. So we slept on the ice, and we were all given an ice axe, and we practiced, you know, hauling people, you know, out of things. I mean, it was absolutely amazing, and Antarctica was just beyond my wildest dreams. I'd wanted to go there since I was 7. And I'd actually been there as a tourist 2 years before that. And so I was just so excited to go again. I'd go again tomorrow. It is such an incredibly, I mean, it's ridiculous to go. It's a beautiful place because it, you know, but it was, and so we were there for summer. So we had 24-hour light for 6-8 weeks of it, which was an extraordinary experience. And we spent quite a lot of time with 2 seabird biologists who were there. And so they, you know, we spent a lot of time talking to them about the work that they did. And then they went off on and lived on this tiny little island that we could see from the station. And they just lived with these penguins and were doing all of this work observing them. So they each lived in these two little, these fantastic sort of like 60s futuristic egg-shaped, they called them goobies, things, little huts on stands bolted into the rock, and they each lived in one of those and then did this work with just all of these penguins. So there were quad bikes then there to, and we would go on the quad bikes up onto the ice plateau. And if you went out on a trip like that, first of all, there were these markers of a track that you had to follow. So no track, but just these kind of bamboo poles in the ice, because there's just crevasses everywhere. So it's really dangerous. So you had to make sure that you followed this track. And also the ice sheet moves a huge amount every year. So, well, not even every year. You know, it's just constantly moving. So the poles always move. So we used to help the field training officer to go out, and he had this GPS thing, and to measure where those things should be. So we would help drill holes in the ice and put these bamboo poles in, and then pour water in and have it freeze. So when you go out on these expeditions, you have to be in constant radio contact with the station to make sure, you know, because a blizzard can come out of nowhere, you know, anything can happen. It is a treacherous place. And you give your party a name. So usually it is, you'll be, because there are a number of, from Mawson, there's a number of field huts out there. They're kind of like a little container that's bolted into the rock, and you can go and stay for a weekend away, which was amazing. We did that as well. But so if you were going out, you would usually call, so if you were going to a hut that's called, say, Fang Hut, you would call yourself the Fang Party. So you'd radio back to base and you'd go, you know, Fang Party to base, blah, 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 blah. And so when we went out to do the one of our trips, we called ourselves Dykes on Bikes. And the guy who was receiving, and there were various shifts, but he said, yes, receiving you, Fang Party. And we said, no, Fang Party, this is Dykes on Bikes. And he went, well, no, Fang Party. We went, no, we're Dykes on Bikes. And he went, all right, Dykes on Bikes. So, well, when we came in, it was the end of winter, so we came in to a certain point and then hit ice. But as the summer progressed, eventually the ice broke up and the harbour became a harbour. And then it was amazing because then the life started to appear. So in the wintertime, there's no life there. And there were a few snow petrels when we first came, but that's it. There's no insects, there's no ants, there's no trees. You know, it's a very, you know, monochromatic place, which I found amazing, like all these different blues, just so much blue in the ice. It's really blue. But as the ice started to break up, seals appeared, penguins appeared. So Mawson is on Horseshoe Harbour, so it is literally a horseshoe, and we could go for a walk out on the west arm of Horseshoe Harbour, and you could just, and it was lovely, you just go after dinner, you go and just walk out there and sit and just kind of, you know, contemplate life over the ice. And then as the ice started to break up, suddenly a penguin would just pop up out of the ice in front of you. And, you know, of course you need to keep a certain distance and so on, but you just sit still, and sometimes a penguin would just come up and go, oh yeah, and then just wander off. And so, you know, that was extraordinary. And then seals started to come up and would be basking on the rocks near the station. And so you could just walk out of our living quarters and just go and sit on a rock, and, you know, over here are half a dozen seals like this. So, you know, it was an incredible privilege, and the AAD does, you know, fantastic work, and I'm happy to spread the word wherever I can.
I really appreciate you coming in and sharing all your stories about In Our Blood, about Janet King and the Antarctica with us. All the best for whatever you're planning to do next.
Thank you very much, and it's just been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support a podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook using the tag @LottlMedia, or head to our website, lotl.com. Thanks again, and see you next time.